It's good to see each of you here today. As Timmy was speaking a minute ago, he shared thoughts about how Jesus' disciples, in a time of uncertainty, in a time of a little confusion about what was before them, were told, when you go to Jerusalem, you meet up with this person who's got a jar of water, and they'll tell you what's next. And then when they got to the supper, Jesus told them again what was about to happen. And that pattern of God revealing to us time after time what's before us continues all throughout the story. It's part of the upper story that we sometimes speak of as you think of God's Word. In this last week's reading in the story, this last week focused on the fall of the kingdoms, of the kingdom of Judah and Israel, and how they were taken into captivity. And that time was one of the darkest hours in the history of God's children. It mattered a lot for them to know what the future might hold, what was in front of them at that time. And we'll look at that darkest hour. We'll look at how God worked to tell them what was before them. Thomas Fuller, back in 1650, spoke about the darkest hour as the hour just before the dawn. And he wasn't an astronomer or a physicist. It's not talking about science. It's talking about how we feel sometimes when we go through times of difficulty and hardship, and how it seems like it's so lonely, so dark at times, just before the light comes that is the revelation of the dawn for us, and how that dawn is something we yearn for, the light, the awakening, and the renewal again. Well, I'm going to move from an author in the 1600s to a little bit more contemporary author, at least try to, one that is more my speed. When Snoopy appeared in the last Peanut strip 13 or so years ago, he appeared on top of his doghouse typing away in that last comic that Charles Schulz wrote. And whenever Snoopy was up on top of his doghouse typing away, he would write those words, "It was a dark and stormy night." That was the way his stories began. So that's the way this lesson will begin, with a dark and stormy night story. And it's about a dark and stormy night that occurred when Hurd and David Dale and several of us were getting ready to go on a hike on the Appalachian Trail from the end of the Smokies part, Davenport Gap. We were traveling up towards Hot Springs, Arkansas, about 36 miles away. And it looked like it was going to be a good trip. Jerry Kreitz was with us. Jerry was our chauffeur on that trip. And he was to ferry the vehicle. Hot Springs, North Carolina. Thank you. There's you can trust Timmy's mom. You can't trust some of the others of us. Along the Appalachian Trail are shelters like this one, and those shelters are great places to stay. They have a roof over at the top. They have dry places to lay your sleeping bag and sleep. They have a place you can build a fire. And Hurd and I and others with us decided we didn't need any of that. We were too smart. We were trying to make as much mileage as we could. We carried as little as we could. We carried just a fanny pack and what little we could take in it. And we were gonna sleep out. And where we got to the trail, David wants me to go ahead, but as a child, that's Jerry. And there's Hurd over there hydrating, drinking Coke number one, was that it? Coke A. Is Hurd always numbered his drinks by the letter and always gave me a hard time by that. And Tom Harbin. But the trail went off in the woods there. That white marker is one of the markers along the trail to mark its way. So we were getting ready to go that first day. We hiked uphill a good bit of the way and got to our campsite at end of 13 miles the first day, having gone through a rainstorm that just thoroughly soaked us. And so we were trying to get warm for the night, had a fire built there, And you can see that instead of sleeping bags or tents, which we were too smart to need, we used just these nylon mesh hammocks made of strings. You could roll them up about the side of your fist and a space blanket to keep us warm. And we were kind of cool to start with that evening. Well, that night turned out to be a dark and stormy night. And that night, as we were trying to get some rest, there was thunder and lightning around us, and the rain came down. And though we had a space blanket over us, each one in our own hammock, we didn't stay very dry. Didn't think really beforehand. It became obvious afterwards, but didn't think beforehand that water would run down the back of the hammock and just soak you. And the wind underneath the hammock, wasn't any protection for that. So we were pretty wide awake and miserable in that dark night with lightning and rain around us. And different ones of us were just praying for the dawn, praying for relief, praying for the night to be over. But it was too early. It was still hours from the dawn. And while I was there just thinking, why am I doing this? and wanting relief in some way, there was someone in our group who got up as the rain came to a close, as the rain slacked off, and didn't create a dawn for us, but created something that in that moment that was better for us. Herd got up in the middle of the night, and he went over to where the fire had been and dug down to where the coals underneath the part that had been put out by the rain. There were still hot coals, and he got some twigs and laid on them and some small pieces of wood. And next thing we know, he's got this fire. And to this day, amazes me that he was able to build a fire out of the wet wood that had been soaked on that dark and stormy night. And that was just one of the most welcome things I could ever imagine, that relief and warmth for us who didn't have any other way to get warm. It made me make the mental note that if I'm ever going to be in a disastrous situation, if I see where Herd's going, I want to be in that area, because he can figure out how to get things done. Can make a difference. Well, as we think about the darkest hour being just before the dawn and how you may have felt in circumstances when it seemed hopeless or dark, the children of Israel were in that situation of longing for a dawn as well. Last week, as Chris taught the lesson here, he talked about Esther and her time and how a decree had gone out from the king, who had been influenced by the wicked Haman. A decree had gone out that all of God's children, all the Jews in the land, were going to be put to death. And when that word came out, when Mordecai learned of what had been done, he did what ultimately thousands of his fellow Jews did. They just cried out with wailing, put on sackcloth and ashes, tore their clothes. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, with wailing, because they were about to be put to death. And he sent word to Esther, who was the queen, also a Jew, sent word to Esther, you need to tell the king what's going on and get him to change his order. And Esther, in her position, said, I can't do that. Anyone who appears uninvited at the king's throne is subject to be put to death. If I go in there, it's like writing my own death sentence. I can't do that. And that word came back to Mordecai, and we last week looked at it. When Esther's words came back, he said, you need to think about the situation you're in. You need to think about the fact that it may well be that God has put you here for such a time as this, so that in this hour of darkness, in this hour of difficulty, in this hour of challenge, that you're the one who can act and make a difference. And that's just what she did. And that's just what she did. And so this time that was so dark, because of God's deliverance out of that hopeless situation and darkness, he turned that darkness into dawn. And his children, the people of Israel, turned that remembrance into a celebration, the Feast of Purim, for centuries to come as they look back on God taking darkness and turning it to light. Well, that's the pattern God has throughout his word. of turning darkness to light, of taking those deep, deep, difficult trials we're in. In this last week's reading through the story, it was the story of the fall of the kingdom. And the fall of the kingdom came about not because they were too weak, but because they chose not to follow God. They chose to disobey. In Jeremiah chapter 20, 25, we read that for 23 years, from the 30th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, the king of Judah, until this very day, the word of the Lord came to me, and I've spoken to you again and again, but you have not listened. That's part of the word of Jeremiah, that God had come time and time again. And here he says, for 23 years, this message has been coming, but you have not listened. You have not listened or paid attention. They said, turn now, each of you, from your evil ways and your evil practices, and you can stay in the land the Lord gave to you and your fathers. He said, if you'll just obey, you can stay here. God will take care of you. But the people refused to listen to his word. In verse 7 of Jeremiah 25, he says, but you did not listen to me, declares the Lord, and you have provoked me with what your hands have made, and you've brought harm to yourself. Therefore, the Lord Almighty says, because you have not listened to my words, I'll summon the peoples of the north and my servant. And who does he call his servant? Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, king of a heathen people. God used this man, who was a non-believer for everything we know, to work his will and come and help the children of Israel understand the consequences of the choices they made to abandon him. And in this prophecy that continues, Jeremiah just says, and this land you're in, it's going to become a desolate land, a land without hope, a land that's barren and forsaken. So we get on to the end of the readings for the week. There's an account that's an account of a valley that's desolate. And it's a representation of Israel and the situation that Israel was in. Ezekiel speaks of it in Ezekiel chapter 37 as the valley of dry bones, a land in which there's no life, no hope. And when you turn there, you read these words from Ezekiel. He says, the hand of the Lord was upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones. He led me back and forth among them, and I just have to picture Ezekiel as he walked back and forth. Was he stepping on these bones, or was his foot rolling over some of them? And I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley, bones that were very dry. They were in a desert land, an arid land, and there was no life left. And he asked me, son of man, can these bones live? And I said, O sovereign Lord, you know the answer. You alone know. Then he said, prophesy to these bones and say to them, dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter in you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come upon you and cover you with skin, and I'll put breath on you, and you will come to life, and then you'll know that I am the Lord. So Ezekiel says, I prophesied to the Lord as I commanded, and as I was prophesying, there was a rattling sound. Just imagine that. As you hear these dry bones start to move and start to hit one another. And the bones came together, bone to bone. And we think about the song. Ankle bone connected to the... I'm not going to sing that, but you think about them come together. I looked and the tendons of flesh appeared on them and the skin covered them, but there was no breath. So there were flesh and muscle and tendons on the bones, but no breath. And then he said to me, prophesy to the breath, prophesy, son of man, and say to it, this is what the sovereign Lord says, come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe into these slain that they may live. So I prophesied as he commanded me, and breath entered them, and they came to life, and they stood up on their feet, a vast army, where there'd been death, where there'd been destruction, where there'd been hopelessness. Here was a huge army that God had created of men standing before him. Then he said to me, son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. I mean, that's where he's getting to the message. What you saw here, waste and destruction and lifelessness, that was God's children. That was his family before God restored them. They say our bones are dried up and our hope is gone. We are cut off. It was a dark and stormy night. They were in a place of despair. As they saw those kingdoms come to an end, as they saw no hope, as they looked for the Messiah to come, they looked for God's kingdom to be restored, they looked for all the things that the prophets had spoken of before, and yet they were being defeated by the enemy. They were being taken captive. They were being led away to a foreign land. Therefore, prophesy and say to them, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, O my people, I'm going to open your graves and bring you up from them. I'll bring you back to the land of Israel. Then you, my people, will know that I am the Lord when I open your graves and bring you up from them. I will put my spirit in you, and you will live, and I will settle you in your own land. Then you will know that I, the Lord, have spoken, and I have done it, declared the Lord. So within that passage, these words just hit me especially, this idea of God saying about those that were lost, those that were hopeless, those that were dead. He says, I'm going to bring you home. I'm going to take you from wherever you are without any hope whatsoever, any ability to move on your own, any ability to change your condition, and I'm going to put life in you and take you to my home. And that is the wonder. That is the wonder. I mean, Timmy in the Lord's Supper was speaking of Jesus telling his disciples what was about to come event by event. And here is God speaking through his prophet, telling us and Israel what's about to come, that when we get to that place, we can't do it on our own. He's going to give us life. He's going to take us home. He has looked ahead and made a way for us. I will put my spirit in you, and you will live. I will settle you back in your own land, that place that's made for you. So you think about the times that we're in a valley, the times that we're in a place where it is a dark and stormy night, a place where we just don't know what we're going to do, don't know how we're going to get dry or warm, or how we're going to take care of what's going on in our families or in our jobs or the things that I've just messed up in my own life, the sin that I've committed, and I don't know how to undo the bad choices that I've made in my past. Every one of us gets in those kind of situations. The good news is God has said he knew that would happen. And he thought ahead about it and prepared a way for us. So where that leaves us is with the plan that he put in place. A plan that centered around the cross of Christ. A plan that gives us hope through that cross and through him. So when Paul was writing to the Corinthians about trouble that they were in, about the dark hour they were in, he was able to say, therefore, we don't lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we're being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles, or some translations say afflictions, are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes, we're looking not at what is seen, but what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary. The stuff around us that's full of problems and difficulties, it's going to pass away. But what we don't see right now, the eternal matters, that's what God's taken care of and prepared for us. Jesus, as he was about to leave his disciples, told them that he was going to prepare a place. He said, don't let your hearts be troubled. He had every reason in the world for his heart to be full of trouble. And he was talking to them, says, you don't have to worry. You believe in God, believe also in me. He said, in my Father's house, there are many rooms. And he told them, if it weren't so, I would have told you, but I'm going to prepare a place for you. And he said, if I'm going there, I'm going to come back, and I'm going to get you, and I'm going to take you there. I'm going to receive you to myself. He has prepared a way to extract us out of that dark and stormy night. So in Matthew 11, as he spoke to his followers, he just said, simply, come to me. Everybody who's weary, everybody who's heavy laden, I'm going to give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me. He said, I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. Know of no other time in Scripture that Jesus really described his own characteristics like that. And that's how he chose to explain himself to the world. I'm gentle, I'm humbling heart. He says, you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be ashamed. You don't have to be full of guilt because of what he's done on the cross for each one of us. I appreciate that. And I appreciate the fact that he's prepared a way, that we can't ever have been in a situation where we're without hope. No matter what I've done, no matter what any of us has done, we can't find ourselves in a place where his love is not strong enough and his sacrifice is not powerful enough to bring us home to him. If you find yourself in that dark and stormy night, if you find yourself in a time of despair, think about the children of Israel and their account and their story. Think about God's deliverance and how he said this valley of dry bones, it's going to come to life, and how God can work that bringing life into our own hearts day by day. If you're here and have a need to respond to the gospel of Christ, we'd just love to help you in any way that we can. Won't you come as we stand and sing?
Lord, to thee for cleansing in thy precious blood that flowed on Calvary. I am coming, Lord, coming now to thee. Wash me, cleanse me in the blood that flowed on Calvary. Jesus calls me on to perfect faith and love, to perfect hope and peace and trust for earth and heaven above. I am coming, Lord, coming now to thee. Wash me, cleanse me in the blood that flowed on Calvary.
As we close this morning, I want to thank you again for being here.